Now we come to this, we have finished. So now we come to the apology, no? This paper, I told you to read the last two paragraphs, which I assume you have done. No exam. Yes.
Virtue is knowledge. And knowledge is virtue?
Is knowledge virtue? The answer is, knowledge expresses itself in virtue. Virtue is knowledge in the sense that virtue depends on knowledge. Now if you reverse it, then you reverse it saying knowledge manifests itself in virtue. Whenever you have right consciousness, there will be a right action. It's like this. There is a relationship between knowledge and action. Knowledge is always a foundation. Action is always a manifestation. So when you say they are equal, it is an equality of a special kind. There is a truth consciousness which is equal to knowledge, and right action is equal to virtue. When you say knowledge, knowledge is truth consciousness. Yesterday we had come to this conclusion that knowledge is a state of consciousness in which the universal truth is known. Not partial, but the universal truth is known. That is how we have defined yesterday knowledge. Knowledge is a state of consciousness in which the whole of the truth is known. Not partial, but whole of truth is known. And that is truth consciousness. Now, truth consciousness is always a foundation. Action is always a manifestation. So whenever you speak of this equation has its speciality. Knowledge is foundation, virtue is the manifestation. So when you want to define it, you have to say, virtue depends upon knowledge. Knowledge does not depend upon virtue, but knowledge manifests itself as virtue. This is the equation. There is a beautiful sentence of the mother regarding herself and Sri Aurobindo. Without him, I exist not. Without me, he remains unmanifest. This is the equation. Without him, I exist not. My own existence has its basis in him. But he does not therefore exist because of me. That's very important. He exists in his own right. For my existence, I will depend upon him. But for manifestation, he depends upon me. Without me, he remains unmanifest. This is the equation. It's a very special kind of equation. That is the relationship between the foundation and manifestation. All over the world, wherever you see, you will find this duality. The foundation and the manifestation. The foundation does not depend for its existence upon manifestation. But manifestation always depends upon the foundation. Is that clear? Right? Now I read to you one of the greatest dialogues in the history of the world. It is called Apology. If you read this account, you get one of the good foundations of Western philosophy. That is why I am reading out to you personally, so that I don't leave it to you read at home. I want to read with you, so that I am sure that you have read it. Or I want to enjoy reading with you. I am sure you will read at home, but I want to enjoy reading it with you. Now this dialogue is written by Plato. Plato was a young man when Socrates was tried, when he was accused and brought before the court. Already he was his disciple. and he was greatly troubled by the trial of Socrates and the judgment which was arrived at the end of the trial, and then the execution of Socrates, the death of Socrates. And therefore Plato has written three dialogues actually. This is one. It is followed by another dialogue called Crito. Apology, Crito, and Phaedo. In fact, all the three dialogues should be read by everybody in our class. But I'll read only with you this one, Apology, and the other two I'll ask you to read at home when you find time. In Apology, you have the trial of Socrates, the accusation made by the prosecutors, then the reply of Socrates, his defense, then the verdict given by the judges, and his statement after the verdict. This is in Apology. In Crito, the main character is Crito, one of the disciples of Socrates. There is an account of how, when Socrates was in jail before execution, his disciples and friends make an arrangement so that Socrates can escape from the jail secretly. Secretly, he won't be caught. And once he goes to another city, there was another government, so this government has no rule over it. So Socrates could escape punishment and can remain alive. So when this plot is given to Socrates, Socrates refuses it. Even though it was possible for him to escape, he refuses any secret conspiracy and says, I will face death, but I will not do something that is not correct. That is the bravery and greatness of Socrates. In Phaedo is a third dialogue. These are the last moments of Socrates, when he is surrounded by his disciples in the jail, and he talks to them on important subjects like what is immortality. Very important subject of Socrates. What is immortality? And he discusses as if he has eternity before him. There is no anguish, no anxiety, no attachment of any kind. He discourses as usual, with a great force and youthfulness. And then when the cup of hemlock, the poison, is brought to him at the appointed hour, he receives the cup, he drinks it very quietly, without any kind of compunction or any resistance. After drinking it, he lies down, and gradually the poison begins to work, and he begins to say that now my lower parts will become numb, and when numbness will invade near my heart, that will be the end of my life. And gradually the poison spreads in his body, and just before his death he calls a disciple and says that he owes a cock to somebody. At the last moment he remembers that a debt is to be paid, and then that friend, the disciple, says debt will be paid. That is the last breath of Socrates. It's a very moving picture of a man who even at the last moment he remembers a debt to be paid and makes it sure that debt will be paid, and then he withdraws and he passes away. Let us now read Apology. There is an introduction. This introduction is written by one of the members of Auroville. You know, we have produced this book, The Aim of Life, with the help of a group of researchers of Auroville, including Dipti, Frederick, and several others. We used to work on this subject and many other subjects.
And what we did was that we selected some of the best passages from the world literature, and then we wrote introductions. So I shall read that introduction. A stout man with a flat face, broad nose, thick lips, heavy beard, shabby clothes, and an unduly large paunch, which he hoped to reduce by dancing. This is how Socrates has been described. Not a very flattering description of the man commonly considered the founder of Western philosophy. Although far from the Greek ideal of beauty, his face shows the honesty, courage, and humor which has come to be called Socratic. Plato speaks of him as all glorious within. For the historical facts of Socrates' life, we have to rely on the accounts of two of his pupils, Plato, the philosopher, and Xenophon, the historian and biographer. Born in 469 BC in Athens, Socrates first learned the trade of his father, a sculptor. He distinguished himself during the Peloponnesian War by his endurance and courage, married Xanthippe, with whom he had three sons, held public office for a short time, and was sentenced to death by drinking hemlock poison in 399 BC. What was his age when he died? Can you tell me? Can you tell me what is his age when he died? He was born in 469 BC. And he died in, how do you count when it is BC? When it is AD, it is easier to count. You have got it? Yes? 70, good. He was 70 years old. Very easy to make out. 469, so 69 years in any case. Then 399, that is 1 year less than 400. So 1 year more you had. So 69 plus 1 is 70. Most of his time was spent in public places of Athens, in the streets, the marketplace, and the gymnasium, engaging his fellow citizens in conversation on subjects ranging from reflections on nature to inquiries into politics. But he never set himself up as a teacher. A number of these conversations were recorded by Plato, who, after Socrates' death, founded the Academy, the famous school of Athens, which lasted nearly 800 years. To establish an academy is a very big task, like establishment of super school. It is also a very big task. Today we may not recognize it, but as years pass, there will be long traditions, and people will flock to this place to study the highest secrets of existence and the practice of these secrets. And you will be counted as the first students of this great school. So Plato established a big institution called Academy. And this Academy produced great number of philosophers. Aristotle, one of the great philosophers of the world, was a pupil of this Academy. He was student of Plato, and Aristotle was a teacher of Alexander the Great.